broadcasting in English. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Pavla Horáková. Coming up in today's show, in a fresh edition of Czech Books, David Vaughan looks back at the life and work of the Prague-born British translator Ewald Ozers, who died last month at the age of 94. Then we'll travel to the South Bohemian town of Slavonice, and later on we bring back our popular miniseries from the archives. All that coming your way over the next half hour, and first we turn to literature. Last month we heard the sad news of the death of Ewald Ozers at his home in England at the age of 94. Born in Prague at a time when it was still part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Ozers was an outstanding linguist and a brilliant translator. Over the decades he translated dozens of Czech writers and poets into English and was equally well known for his translations from German. David Vaughan looks back at a fascinating life.
I was lucky enough to meet Ewald Ozers on several occasions in Prague, and each time I was struck by his boyish enthusiasm, even though at the time he was already well into his 80s. He simply adored languages, picking them up, as one fellow translator put it, as easily as catching a cold. And he simply relished the twists and turns that languages take in the course of the years. But what I have always found most extraordinary about Ewald Ozers is that he built his career on translating from his second into his third language. He grew up in a middle-class, German-speaking Jewish family, at home in the multilingual, cosmopolitan, but uneasy environment of Prague between the wars, and had it not been for Hitler, that was probably where he would have stayed. Instead, he left for London in 1938, becoming a refugee when Hitler occupied Prague a few months later. During the war, he enrolled in the BBC monitoring service, at the same time studying Russian at the University of London. In the following 6 decades, he went on to translate many of the best modern Czech writers and poets, including poets Jaroslav Seifert, Miroslav Holub and Jan Skácel, and the novelist Ivan Klíma. In 2007, he published his autobiography, Snows of Yesteryear, A Translator's Story. Here is an interview that I recorded with Ewald Ozers in Prague's Café Slavia in 2001.
I was born in Prague in 1917, and I lived in Prague until the summer of 1938, when about 2 weeks before Munich, I went to England.
And you were born into a German-speaking family?
Yes, my mother was an Austrian from Linz. And my father, although he came from a Prague Jewish family, belonged to the generation which had gone to German schools and mostly spoke German. He knew Czech, but we spoke German at home and went to German schools.
Very often people talk about the cosmopolitan Prague of the 1930s when you were a young man, this Czech, Jewish, German mix. What was it really like? There's a lot of mythologizing about it.
No, I think it existed all right. And there was a fourth stream, the German-Jewish refugees who came to Czechoslovakia to escape pre-war Hitlerite Germany. Yes, these different cultures existed, but I think in the generation of my parents, they did not mix very much. They each lived in their own sphere. But my generation made a deliberate effort for integration. And I remember, for instance, that although I have no acting talent, I belong to a dramatic group called German Studentenbühne, and we made contact with a Czech student theatrical group, which was then led by Pavel Tigrid. I think we really worked towards a kind of integration of these different strands. of Prague tradition.
And we're sitting today in the Café Slavia. Often when you think of Prague in the 1930s, you imagine café culture. Was it really like that? And for example, did you come here to the Café Slavia?
Not often to the Café Slavia, I think once or twice. More often to the Café Continental on Prikopé, or the Café Alpha on Václavské, or the Café Julisch, which had a very good selection of foreign newspapers. And it was perfectly all right for young students to order a small black coffee and to spend the next 4 hours sitting in the café reading the international press or studying for exams. And this was an accepted pattern.
You, as a young man, you believed in this meeting of cultures of the Czech, the German, the Jewish culture. At what point did you realize that things were going to go wrong and you decided to leave the country?
Well, of course, one realized that things were getting worse in Germany, especially after the Kristallnacht. I was studying chemistry then at a German university, and I was the only Jewish student in my year. And the rest of the students were not only not Jewish, but nearly all of them were also Nazis, members of the Henlein Party. And I had a fairly miserable life there towards the end. They would turn off my Bunsen burners or pour something into my experiments. And I realized that certainly I couldn't continue there. So I decided to work on my dissertation in London and then submit it here in Prague at the German university and get my degree. But of course then came Munich and 6 months later the occupation of the rest of Czechoslovakia, and so I became a refugee in England at that time. I didn't leave Czechoslovakia as a refugee yet, but I turned into one in March 39.
And how did you go from being a refugee and a chemist to becoming one of the foremost translators of Czech literature into English?
Well, I realized during my first few months at University College London that I would never be an outstanding chemist. Also, by then, of course, my money supply from Czechoslovakia had stopped in March 39, and I had to look for a job. And I found a post at the BBC, and so I stopped studying chemistry, and after a while returned to my original love, languages, and studied Russian and comparative Slavonic linguistics at the University of London.
And you married an English woman?
And I married an English woman who was a chemist then also at the university. So, I mean, by now I've had 60 years of built-in English conversation. This is how I managed to become a translator and maybe in a small way a writer of English prose and poetry.
And after the Second World War, you decided not to return to Czechoslovakia. Why was that?
Well, I had an English wife and two monolingual English children. And by then I had really come to feel comfortable in England. So I decided not to return.
And how on earth did you achieve becoming an accomplished translator into a language that you only really learned to master as an adult?
Well, this is a difficult question. I don't quite know how one achieves mastery of a language. It was a language I spoke every day, and I think perhaps I have a certain talent for languages. As a teenager, I learned English and French. And I was a very good Latinist at school. And I had been translating ever since my teens. I began translating contemporary Czech and to a lesser degree Slovak poetry into German then. And it was published in the Sunday Cultural Supplement of Praga Presse. So translation seemed to me a perfectly natural activity. And more importantly, I enjoyed doing it.
You've translated many of the foremost writers, Czech writers of the second half of the 20th century, including Ivan Klima, Miroslav Holub, Jaroslav Seifert, many others. Who have you most enjoyed translating?
I enjoyed translating Seifert from the start. And in fact, two of my volumes of Seifert's poetry were published before he even became a candidate for the Nobel Prize. And I enjoyed translating Miroslav Holub because he was very easy to translate. His kind of humor, tongue-in-cheek writing, appealed to me. I think I have the same kind of sense of humor that he had.
And what are you working on at the moment?
At the moment, I'm working on Jan Skarcel, very much more difficult poet than Holub. Very difficult in terms of interpretation. Even when I ask native Czech speakers to tell me what a particular passage means, I find that they are almost as baffled as I am. But I think I'll get there.
How do you feel about the contemporary state of Czech literature? It doesn't seem to be thriving at the moment, does it?
Well, so people say, but I'm really in no position to form an opinion. I don't read nearly enough, and I read very little contemporary Czech prose.
Why is that?
Time, I think. Somebody told me years ago, you'll have to make up your mind whether you wish to spend your life reading or writing. There isn't time to do both. And I think they were right.
One last question. Where do you feel at home? In which country?
I feel at home in Europe. I spent all my childhood holidays in Austria, and I love the mountains. I was a skier until age 72, then my cardiologist told me it was time for me to hang up my skis. I regret having followed his advice to this day. I always went skiing in the Austrian Tyrol, and I love it. I feel at home in Prague for a limited period. I mean, I love coming to Prague. It still takes my breath away. But although I'm very happy in Prague, and I come to Prague 3 or 4 times a year, I don't think I would like to live here permanently. Up to a month or 6 weeks, perhaps. But I think I would miss the openness to the world that you get in England.
Ewald Ozes, thank you very much indeed.
And thank you.
That was the translator Ewald Ozes talking to me in 2001. He died last month at the age of 94. To end, here is his translation of Miroslav Holub's short poem, Death of a Sparrow. Ewald Ozes had a sparrow-like sprightliness himself that I think makes this poem rather apt. Death of a Sparrow. A sparrow's death is quite tiny, grey, with minute, wiry claws, and dust, and the end of hopping is calling now, and the empty air is closing its eyes and calling now. Mother is picking over the thinnest good night squeak and calling. A shadow is flying up and calling. Surely we're not staying here, roars the setting sun. Quick, soon there'll be decay. All the world's tenderness instantly requests, let's go. And at that moment, it just isn't possible.
David Vaughan will be back again next week with a fresh edition of Czech Books. Now it's time for Spotlight, and today Rosie Johnston takes us to the picturesque town of Slavonice.
It's a very crisp autumn day here in South Bohemia, and I'm slowly trundling towards Slavonice, which is in the very far south of this country, right on the Austrian border. I'm in a modern-looking, but as you can probably hear, rather shuddery sort of train. And I'm heading towards this stunningly pretty Czech town, which has, over recent years, become something of an artist's colony. So I'm off to find out more about that in this week's Spotlight. After my rickety train ride, which was half of the fun of the visit, the first stop in Slavonica was the tourist office, situated right on the small town's main square. The office is housed in one of Slavonica's most historic buildings, which is in itself definitely worth a look. On the roof of the bureau are some colourfully restored Renaissance murals, depicting scenes from the New Testament, more specifically, pictures of the marriage in Canaan. But as Slavonica is perhaps best known for its building's elaborate facades, it seems only appropriate that my tour started in the blustery open space in front of the office. I'll let my guide introduce herself.
My name is Květa Štěpánikova.
And Květa, where are we standing right now?
Just now we are standing at the square in town Slavonice. This is the Renaissance town. The founding of the town dates back to somewhere around the 12th century. The great economic boom for the town was in the 16th century when the leader of this town was Zachariáš from Hradec. He's invited many famous builders and builder masters, and the famous builder masters was Leopold Esterreich.
And today it's a town that gets a lot of tourists visiting, is that right?
Yeah, it is. The most tourists are in summer. Yeah.
And where are the majority of them from? You're right on the Austrian border, so are they mostly Austrian, or do you get British people coming here?
British people too, but the more is from Austria, and just now it's. It's from Japanese. This summer, what is in Japanese too?
Crikey!
Yeah,
that's unexpected.
Because the famous town is Telt, and they are going there and now too.
Okay, so why do people come to Slavonica? I mean, I can see it right now, and I can sort of see why people would come. It's very pretty. But what are the big tourist attractions here?
The biggest for tourists are buildings. We have Bar Square, and the bigger is. Just now we are standing, and we have the small, very nice square, and it's the famous and very nice buildings.
When we talked just a minute ago, when you answered one of my questions, you said that this place is very close to Telč, which is a famous, very, very pretty town, and so people who go to Telč come here. Does this town have anything that Telč doesn't? Is it better than Telč?
I think the better is Slavonice, but the Telč is famous because the town is in UNESCO, and this Slavonice isn't it, and I think that it's the famous in the other countries.
Slavonica has a plethora of little galleries and works by Josef Čapek and even Marc Chagall hang in various places around this small town. But as well as being a good place to go and see other people's masterpieces, Slavonica is a town in which you can create your own, among other locations in the Mažiž Ceramics Workshop in the centre of the town. Marta Tumová, a painter at Keramika Mažiž, outlines the studio's history.
No, tak Mažiž je vlastně dávno kdysi zapomenutá vesnice.
Mažiž is actually a long forgotten ghost town which is in between Slavonice and the Austrian border. It was virtually cut off under the communist regime. But after the fall of communism, our founder Krištof Trubáček bought some of the deserted buildings and started making ceramics there, which was his lifelong dream.
Svoji keramiku, po které vlastně toužil už od dětství.
There are lots of places where you can try your hand at Mažiž in Slavonice today, which leads me to ask Marta Tumová what Mažiž actually is.
Keramika Mažiž je vlastně ručně dělaná keramika.
Mažiž ceramics are handmade bits of pottery. They are made first on a pottery wheel and then painted specially. Every piece is specially painted and no two objects are the same. And each piece is an original which you couldn't find anywhere else. So that's what is interesting about it. Mažiž ceramics are generally very colourful, there are lots of animals painted on our goods, and so those are its characteristics.
Barvitost, zvířátka a tak.
Marta
Marta shows me how one of the workshop's signature mugs is born. It grows out of a little lump of clay spinning round and round on a pottery wheel. Afterwards, she tells me about what unifies the various products she makes.
Tak důležitý je hlavně, aby se člověk na zákazníci vlastně rádi dívali.
What is most important to us is that we make things that people like to look at. We make our mugs, for example, so that our customers every morning when they make themselves a cup of tea are in a good mood when they look at the cup they are drinking out of. So we use lots of animals, flowers and nature in our designs. But of course customers can come along and design and make a mug for themselves. They can buy a plain white mug and use our paints, get instructions from us about how to do it and paint their own original.
Pokyny vlastně od našich zaměstnanců a může si každý svůj originál namalovat.
Slavonice is pretty difficult to get to if you don't have a car, but making your way there by tiny little trains is quite an adventure, as is painting your own mug, and the whole experience is thoroughly aesthetically pleasing, even on a grey October day. That edition of Spotlight with Rosie Johnston was first broadcast in October 2008. And we'll wind up today's show with another of David Vaughan's popular miniseries from the archives.
After the communist coup, Czechoslovak radio was at the political vanguard and transformed into a tool of propaganda. One of the first big changes at Radio Prague was that our familiar call sign from Dvořák's New World Symphony was replaced by a stirring socialist anthem, Kupředu levá. The words are simple. Left foot forwards, and never a backward step. All broadcasts acquired a political hue. Here, for example, is a factory worker talking about his first love.
Tehdy mi ještě nebylo 15, když nám přišla do továrny a já jí poprvé spatřil.
I wasn't yet 15 when she was brought to the factory, and I first caught sight of her. It was love at first sight. I know that many of the others were envious because we became inseparable friends. For that whole year we remained faithful. We had some wonderful times together. She was always the same because no one else knew how to talk to her as I did. I knew that one day we would have to part, but I stayed faithful to the end. I was just thinking about this when the foreman came round and shook me out of my daydream with the words, "So, we're taking you away from that drill." Yes, my first and greatest love was a drill. An anonymous Czech worker there talking in the early 1950s. For the new atheist regime, Christmas posed something of a problem, because it didn't want to be seen just to be spoiling the fun. In 1952, the Prime Minister and later President, Antonín Zápotocký, offered a rather unusual Christmas greeting to radio listeners, capturing perfectly the spirit of the time.
Ježíšek vyrostl, zestaral, narostly mu vousy a stává se z něho děda mráz.
First, he tells listeners that the infant Jesus, who in Czech tradition brings the Christmas presents, has now grown up into his Russian secular equivalent, Grandfather Frost. In poetic terms, he then goes on to describe how Grandfather Frost's path is lit not just by one star, as in Bethlehem, but by a whole plethora of red stars shining above our mines, steelworks, factories and building sites.
We'll be right back.
David Vaughan's from the archives, which Radio Prague is currently rerunning. You will find the entire series at www.radio.cz, along with all Radio Prague's programs in text and sound. I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. If you'd like to contact us, our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. This is Pavla Horáková saying thanks for joining us today and goodbye.
Vous écoutez Radio Prague.